We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, what is up?
A lot.
It is. There is a lot going on.
We don't really even have time for Thanksgiving.
No.
There's no time for that.
No. So, first let me just tell you what we got going on today.
A lot.
We do have a lot. Adam and I are like current, present day, right now, Jones and Adam. But we're also going to be joined during the show by future Jones and Adam with a little pod after dark. Future Jones and Adam are going to recap the game against St. Francis that happened yesterday, that at this current time, we don't know what happened during the game. We certainly hope the Tar Heels are successful, but we don't know yet. What we do know is that Carolina won by 50 on Friday night against Tennessee Tech. We'll talk about it. What we do know is that the Tar Heels toppled Western Carolina on Saturday in Keenan Stadium. We'll talk about that. What we do know is that the Tar Heels brought home their 7th national championship in field hockey on Sunday. And we're going to talk to the head coach of the Tar Heels, Hall of Famer, the legend, name on the stadium, Karen Shelton. That's got to be weird playing in the stadium with your name on it. She talks about that a little bit. We'll talk to Coach Shelton. And also, we're going double guest, Adam. One pod this week, but double guest. Dwight Hollier, former Tar Heel All-ACC linebacker, played in the league for almost 10 years. And Dwight is now back as an associate AD here at Carolina. We're going to talk to him about that role, about his playing days. And kind of unexpectedly, Adam, it got to be a very personal place with Dwight Hollier and talking about his role is really about wellness, and that means both physical and mental wellness. And he talked about some battles with depression that he had after his playing days were over, which I don't think is an unusual story. And so, man, we're all over the place this pod.
We've dealt with some heavy issues on the pod this fall.
We have, yeah. There's been some Matt Doherty with a very serious talk about his time as the head coach of Carolina basketball and the things that happened there. Jason Brown, very heavy topic of conversation with him. Now Dwight Hollier.
You and AJ Blue solved some social problems in America.
Yeah, we broke it down.
I mean, I'm not sure we're smart enough to be discussing the things we're discussing, but keep on plugging.
Yeah, totally not.
Yeah, just keep faking it.
But so we've got all that to talk about, plus Adam probably has a list.
Probably.
And, hey, by the way, we're not going to have a story time today, but we've gotten a couple of good story times that we are going to use in the future. So I'm kind of invigorated by the reemergence of story time.
Yeah.
And really, that's an all forever. You can send us CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. If you have a good story, send it to us. If it has some kind of tie to the Tar Heels, we love telling your stories on the pod too, so bring them on.
I thought there for a couple months people had just stopped having Tar Heel experiences.
Yeah.
But it turns out that they were still having them. They just waited to send them to
us. They thought that we had moved on from story time.
No. You never leave behind Mr. Goosehawkers. Yeah. No goose left behind.
Okay, so Adam, as we said, the Tar Heels, as you are hearing this now, will have already played another game against St. Francis, and future Jones and Adam will pot after dark about that. But just briefly, we'll kind of go in chronological order here. Tar Heels played Tennessee Tech on Friday night. Adam, I don't know any major storylines that came out of that game other than the Tar Heels were clearly better. They won by 50. The only three things jumped out to me about it, and none of them are breaking news. One is just the depth that Carolina has, and it got contributions from a huge amount of guys. 11 of the 11 regulars that played, all 11 scored three or more points in the game. I think it was 10 had an assist, maybe. I'm going to miss this a little bit. Hold on, I tweeted it out. I'll see if I can find my own tweet and tell us more about it. But the depth of the contributions of the team, I thought, was impressive. Also, from Carolina's side, the fact that the Kenny Williams injury did not appear to be a long-term issue, because when it happened late in the game, it was certainly a little disconcerting. And then finally, oh, by the way, those numbers to back up what I was talking about. All 11 scored three or more points. All 11 had two or more rebounds. 10 had an assist. 10 had a steal. 6 had a block. 5 made a three-pointer. 10 shot a free throw, and 8 of them made at least one free throw. So, a lot of guys contributing. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, KJ Smith got a dunk at the end the day that he was on the pod and said that as he was going to dunk it, he said he thought Big Grits is going to want me to dunk this. Yeah, well, of course.
I think that's probably been the thought process through many great shots in Tar Heel history, probably starting with Luke May's shot against Kentucky that was the same weekend that Big Grits was christened. And I think that's what Luke was thinking as he let that ball go. Big Grits wants to go to the Final Four.
He's like, I need Big Grits to say got it.
Yeah. And what can I do to make that happen? Make a shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought another thing I would add in there is the continued good play of Seventh Woods.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. 20 assists and now 4 turnovers on the year going into the St. Francis game for Seventh Woods.
Future Jones and Adam will update that number.
Yeah.
And if he commits 9 turnovers, we'll delete this part. But I think – I mean, I think at this point, you're not dealing with just a game or two with Seventh. It's a pretty decent stretch. Now I think you want to see him against a little better competition, which you'll get to see this weekend. But I thought it was really cool. Of course, everyone here listens to the Tar Heel Sports Network from pregame until the very end of postgame.
Yeah.
And so now, possibly, this will be the routine going forward. We'll have the chance to talk to a player kind of before they go in and talk to the rest of the media. So on Friday, it was Seventh Woods, and I thought this was cool. He was kind of narrating some highlights to put on Twitter for the social media folks, and so they said, well, tell us about that play where you threw it behind the back to Cam, and Cam hit the three. And he goes, he wasn't not nice, but he said, I don't really want to do that. And everybody kind of chuckled, like, haha, Seventh, you don't want to talk about how awesome you are. And right. He goes, well, I mean, I feel like that's bragging. So I thought that was cool. Like, that's very Seventh Woods.
We've got to get Seventh Woods on soon. I really like Seventh Woods. He's very quiet, kind of an understated guy, but he's just a nice person.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if he can have kind of a nice understated role this year if he keeps playing the way he is playing, because you're alleviating some of the pressure from Coby White to have to play 38 minutes or something ridiculous. If you can bring in Seventh Woods and he can steadily – hand out assists, and he also knocked down a couple perimeter jumpers on Friday. I don't think you don't necessarily depend on that every game, but it's a nice little bonus to have.
I thought, talking about listening on the Tar Heel Sports Network from pregame to postgame, one thing that I thought found really interesting, Coach Williams, in our pregame conversation, I asked him about Coby White and said, you know, Coby clearly can play at a different gear, alluding to his speed. I said, you know, how are you asking him to continue to do that, but then also make good decisions in what he's doing? And Coach said, oh, I have no problem with his decisions. He said he's making fine decisions. So the problem I have is that the other his teammates aren't running with him. He said that Kobe is really fast, and if you watch the tape, he's running with the ball past everybody else on his team on the floor. They can't keep up. And he didn't say that in a negative way about Kobe White. He said it in a the other guys need to run harder kind of way. And I had never, not once, had that thought come into my mind, Adam, but I think that what an interesting kind of angle to approach it from, that that's something that needs to happen more often, because a lot of times Kobe White's getting down there and he's kind of one on two or one on three, and it's not because he's doing something wrong. It's because he's so fast that his teammates aren't there with him.
You've heard about a couple things on this pod that I bet you're going to read about on GoHeels.com in the days to come. The seventh thing, and then this thing, which I agree, I thought was a good point. And then there was about 5 minutes into the game on Friday, Kobe White had sort of a push after a missed shot from Tennessee Tech, and it ended up being Kobe White against five because he was ahead of all four of his teammates. He ended up scoring because he's kind of a ridiculous scorer. But that happened a couple times. But then I thought also what was interesting about that game was there were at least twice where after Tennessee Tech makes, Kobe White beat them back down the court and scored, or else created a basket for somebody else. And I remember Ty Lawson saying that you can tell when we're really going the tempo Coach Williams wants us to go when we beat the other team down after they make a basket. Anybody can run after a miss. But when you're running after the makes, that's when Coach Williams really gets excited. And
I'm getting excited just hearing about this.
So the fact that Kobe White has picked up and is able to do that, I think, is a very good sign, because it was only game number four.
Yeah.
Only game number four.
He's been defensive player of the game one time in these first four games, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was junior wise Ty Lawson saying that, not freshman headband Ty Lawson, who was kind of a silly little guy. So Kobe White has already in some pretty rarefied air there.
Adam, anything else from Tennessee Tech before we talk a little football?
That Kenny Williams injury was, hold your breath, scary.
Yeah.
I mean, the Smith Center went silent. And Coach Williams was on him like lightning. And that's when I got worried that it was bad.
Well, and you alluded to this because your postgame column was about Kenny. And we had actually talked about Kenny in the pregame as well on the radio. And we said similar things in that Kenny Williams is not shooting the ball very well right now. He's 2 of 16 going into the St. Francis game from three-point range. Of course, you figure those numbers are going to even back out. He's a much better shooter than that stat would suggest at this moment. But it's to his credit that you haven't even thought that he's going to be off the floor because he's shooting poorly. He's too good at everything else. And he's just so valuable to what Carolina does on a team that has, and I think will continue to grow in this area, the ability to score from a lot of different places. You certainly want Kenny Williams to shoot better than 2 of 16 from 3, but he is so much more than that on this team and what he's able to do.
I think my favorite play of the year so far was on Friday night when he missed the three in the corner on the baseline, and Tennessee Tech had a run out, and Carolina was up by 35. I mean, there was absolutely no reason for him to get back. And Tennessee Tech tried to throw a lob because they had a two-on-one for just a second. But then out of space came Kenny Williams to knock the ball away, and he actually secured the ball after he dove into the first row. I mean, there's no one else on the team or maybe the ACC who would make that play. And it wasn't even making a basket. But it was such a great play. Like, as I was sitting there, I was like, I said out loud, whoa, what a play. I mean, because it was just, that was pure Kenny Williams. I could watch that all day long.
So, Tar Heels won that game by 50. Not a big surprise. Also not a big surprise that the Tar Heels won on Saturday against Western Carolina. Honestly, kind of just a workman-like effort. It wasn't as though there were a bunch of huge highlights and super exciting play. And I don't say that to downplay the victory or anything like that. It was just kind of Carolina was better than Western Carolina, as you would expect the Tar Heels to be. And they just went out there and did what they had to do to win the game. I think the big positives from the game are you got to play a ton of young players. The last quarter and a half, Carolina played almost exclusively reserves. They were able to just get a lot of young players, particularly on the offensive and defensive line, some reps, which I do think are valuable for a couple reasons. One, just to get those guys out there. And the coaches then have more film on a guy like Zach Gill or Jahlil Taylor or Chris Collins or Jake Lawler or whomever. So they have a little more to go off of than just practice. I think also you had a couple of just feel-good stories in a season that hasn't had a lot of those, with Manny Miles going and throwing the Hail Mary touchdown, Hail Manny touchdown at the end of the first half with his dad there the day before his dad takes the new job at Kansas, and just a feel-good moment. You had Toe Groves scoring his first touchdown after what has been a really tough journey for him with injuries. He's had two very serious knee injuries during his time here, but able to contribute this year and then go out there and score his first touchdown was neat to see. And I think you got to see also Javonte Williams is a guy who I really think he's going to be a really good back. And, you know, right now he's just behind Michael Carter and Antonio Williams and Jordan Brown because he's younger than them. But I think you can see that he has got a lot of talent at that running back position. He runs so hard, which I think is the best thing for him. So a lot of positives. You know, I think, Carol, you know, those two picks that Nathan threw were not great throws. I know that he'll be frustrated with that. You let the quarterback, Tyree Adams, get out a little bit in the second half, but that dude's a good player. I mean, if he gets out of the pocket, he's tough. And so there were some negatives too, but I think big picture, that game was only a story if you lose it, and it was nice to get some positive momentum that you hope will carry over to NC State this Saturday.
Yeah, all you needed to get out of that game was a win and hopefully healthy.
Yeah, and I don't know. As we're talking right now, I don't know about Michael Carter and Jason Strobridge, who are two important players for Carolina that both left that game with injury. So got to knock on some wood here that it wasn't serious.
I agree. That was cool to see Manny Miles complete the Hail Mary, and then also to see sort of everyone go through their memory banks on Twitter and try to remember the last time Carolina had done that. Of course, Lee Pace eventually comes up with the answer. I think the 95 game against State, Mike Thomas to Darren Ashford.
I had totally forgotten that play. I remember the game, particularly because the grass was yellow.
Yeah, the field was brown. Yeah.
And so I remember the game day after Thanksgiving, but I did not remember that play at all.
And that was not the Donnie Thompson body slam
game.
I don't think.
I think that was 93.
I think that's right. There was a lot happening in those few years of the Carolina State rivalry. So cool to see Manny Miles get to do that, especially with his dad there, because everybody was all excited, oh, Les Miles is here, and what's happening with him? Is he on his way to Kansas? As it turns out, yes. He just stopped by Chapel Hill to see his son throw a touchdown pass.
It was, I tell you, that was a really well-executed. I mean, it just, when he threw it, you could tell there was a chance for it to be completed, because Carolina had the guys in position just how you try to do it. And Brian and I were even talking on the air. I mean, it's just the goal, the dream in that scenario is for it to get popped up like that, because that's when you really have a good chance to catch it. And so just a neat moment. Jake Vargas on the other end of it, his first career touchdown as well. So, again, in a season where there hasn't been a ton of feel-good, that was a feel-good for the Tar Heels.
How many times does the tight end come down with that ball? Not many.
Yeah, not very often. You're right. Adam, since we are not going to have a second pod this week, I do want to look ahead to State just a little bit. Just in pure X and O wise, the biggest challenge for Carolina is can they somehow make Ryan Finley uncomfortable? Because State's offensive line is a veteran group that has had a lot of success, and when Finley has time to throw, he can pick you apart. Some of that is he also is a veteran guy, and some of that is got really good receivers. They have a lot of big, tall receivers that they can throw to. It's the best part of what they do, and Carolina's going to have to be ready for that. I think the Heels at times have been good defending the pass this year, but I think when they have done it, it's because they've been able to get pressure. When the opposition's been able to sit back there and throw, it hasn't been as good as it normally isn't. So that will be a huge thing to watch in this game.
And conversely, Carolina throwing the ball against NC State, because the Packs had some trouble stopping the pass as well. So you look at it on paper, this has a chance to be like 45-42, which means it'll probably be 7-3. But both these teams have the chance that they could put up a lot of points in this game, especially through the air.
So 12:20 on Saturday, senior day, a lot of seniors who have played big roles for Carolina, Cole Holcomb, Jalen Dalton, Tyler Powell, Freeman Jones, Jeremiah Clark. I'm just going off the top of my head here. Thomas Jackson is a senior as well. So Malik Carney. So there'll be a lot of guys playing for the final time as a Tar Heel. And hopefully, because I do think if you win it, if you're Carolina, you at least change the feel a little bit. Certainly the season in total is never going to be looked at as a positive because of the frustrations that the Heels have had to deal with. But I do think you at least give a little positive shot of momentum going to the offseason for sure.
And change the offseason storyline a little bit and maybe change the recruiting storyline a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Let's now, Adam, move into the future. We're going to move and visit future Jones and Adam.
Let me get my hoverboard.
Their future Jones and Adam are going to pot after dark a little bit, break down this game that the Tar Heel basketball team just had about against St. Francis. So when future Jones and Adam are done with that, we are back with a lot more. But let's venture into the future for a pot after dark. Oh, Adam, we've traveled in time. And now it's time to do a little pot after dark after Carolina's 101-76 win over St. Francis in the Smith Center tonight. Tar Heels moved to 5-0. Adam, I thought, to me, a couple of big storylines from this game. Number one was the positive contribution when the game – I mean, Carolina was never super threatened in this game. But when the Tar Heels put it from still a little close to out of reach, it was Nasir Little – 1A and 7th Woods kind of 1B, I thought, who did it. Little with the points, and Woods with some effort. He was on the floor and made some nice passes. So that stretch and the continued performance of Carolina's depth, a big storyline in this game to me. And then also, I think, just the deficiencies might be too strong a word, but some things that the Tar Heels are very clearly going to have to improve on moving forward, which is continuing to do better job, more consistently taking care of the basketball. What happens, I think, when you play somebody who has either an elite big man or two pretty good big guys, and how the Tar Heels handle that. And then also just guarding on the ball, because there were times tonight where Jamal King, who's a good player for St. Francis, but a lot of the offense for the Red Flash was just Jamal King was going to go one-on-one and try to get into the lane and then decide to either shoot it or kick it to one of the corners for a three-point shot.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that when St. Francis closed to maybe about 10 in the second half and Roy Williams got mad at the five on the floor because they were basically just letting the Red Flash do whatever they wanted to. And so he called over the five who were on the court, which at that time was 7th Woods, Cam Johnson, Nasir Little, Sterling Manley, Kenny Williams. And he gave him the what for.
Yeah.
They're over there on
the
sideline.
Who for, what for.
And then the Tar Heels came out and actually played tough defense and went on an 11-2 run because they were playing defense. They were guarding the ball. They were finishing the possession with a defensive rebound and getting out and running. They can play defense like that all the time, I think, but we really haven't seen it for more than about 3 minutes at a time. And if Carolina only plays defense for 3 minutes at a time in Las Vegas, then the biggest losses ain't going to be at the tables, Jones. Got to get better defensively. Nasir Little, 19 points on 9 field goal attempts. That's pretty good. That's almost Jameson-like.
What Nasir Little did extraordinarily well, in my opinion, on Monday night, and what is going to continue to earn him time, is the energy in which he plays. And the rebounding, just the pure effort. That play where, and he didn't even record a stat on this play, Adam, but somebody had missed a shot for Carolina on the left sideline, a three-pointer. And Nasir kind of mistimed his jump just a little bit, and so he had the ball in his hands for a rebound, but he was coming down, and somebody for St. Francis knocked it away. And he made as strong an effort as he could make to go to try and get it. He's scratching and clawing and jumping and didn't get it. But just the effort that he showed, and even Roy Williams kind of helped him up because when he ended his portion of the play, he was on the ground by the Carolina bench. You know, Coach Williams kind of helped him up and patted him on the backside, and he clearly has the physical ability that a lot of people don't have.
But if he adds in that kind of effort, he's going to play a ton as the season continues to move along.
I thought his most highlight-worthy play
It was that big dunk, Adam. Even I knew that.
Yeah, but I thought his most kind of amazing play was when he was sitting on 19 points and he got the ball right at the free throw line. I mean, he had an easy basket. He either could have shot a free throw line jumper or he could have just done what he did the entire game, just take it to the rim and lay it up. And he chose to pass it inside to Luke May because Luke May was standing completely unguarded under the basket. And you could tell it even took Luke May by surprise because I think Carolina turned it over. It kind of went off May's hands because he was thinking, what is Nasir Little doing passing the ball right now? Just take it to the rim, big guy.
Yeah.
But I think, to me, I think that's kind of one question you go to Las Vegas with is, as the games get closer and Carolina has those possessions where they've got to score, who's that guy right now? And I don't think we know. And maybe there doesn't have to be a guy. Kenny Williams said after the game, he doesn't think there needs to be a guy. Like last year, it was Joel Berry last year. Give the ball to Joel Berry.
Right.
This year, I don't necessarily know who you give it to. And Kenny Williams said, as long as there's five on the floor who can score, which he feels like Carolina has all the time, he doesn't think you need a guy.
I do think the post is something that we're going to learn a lot about in Vegas from the Tar Heels. And if they can compete at the highest level like they want to with it, playing with not exactly a pure post guy in there all the time.
Yeah, I don't think we know anything more about the rotation than we did a month ago.
No.
Because Carolina's had so many different fives on the court, I'm not even sure who I know. I'm not sure that I know what five Roy Williams feels the best about having on the court because you can't really tell. But I think after the next three games, I think we'll have a much better idea of what he thinks his best five might be.
All right, Adam, anything else before we go back in time to the rest of the pod, which includes our Karen Shelton interview, national champion seven times over, including just recently on Sunday, and an interview with Dwight Hollier.
Field hockey team got a big hand at halftime. Yeah. Well-deserved, of course, at halftime of the St. Francis game.
All right, let's head back in time. Although still
gotta go back in time.
Although still just current time for you, but back in time for Adam and me. Wrap your mind around that, Adam. Here we go. The first part of this pod, Adam, as we're now back in present day, what a luxurious surrounding we are in. We are in the brand new field hockey stadium, Karen Shelton Stadium, here in Chapel Hill. The field hockey program, you know, nothing going on with them. Just the day after they won the national championship, nice enough to let us borrow some space in their building to do the pod, this portion of our pod today. And the reason why is because we have the opportunity to speak to Karen Shelton.
This really is a nice building.
Yeah, we got the tour from Coach Shelton. It is fancy.
And also, this is also a good reason to join the Rams Club.
Ooh.
Because the Rams Club built this very nice building. And you can, of course, if you're not a member of the Rams Club, you can be. And if you already are, maybe you feel like you want to honor either Karen Shelton or the field hockey program, throw a little bit on the Karen Shelton Stadium Fund. I'm sure that would be much appreciated because this place really is nice. When we sat down, I said, wow, I hope the new pod studio is going to be this nice.
Yeah, no, that really was what Adam said.
And you said, well, there's probably no chance of that.
Yeah, I said, yeah, keep dreaming, bro. Yeah.
Because, well, we haven't won seven national championships.
Yep. Before we get to our Karen Shelton interview, let's get to our UNC Healthcare Know Your Stats feature brought to you by UNC Healthcare, My UNC Chart. You can keep track of your personal health stats by visiting myuncchart.org to sign up. Adam, our stat today is seven. That is the number of national titles that the field hockey program has won. We are looking at it right now, 1989, 1995, 1996, 1997. They were going there in the mid-90s. 2007, 2009, and now 2018. The interesting part is Carolina had been to 10 consecutive Final Fours. This is a 10th straight Final Four that the Tar Heels had been to, but hadn't been able to grab that seventh national title until this year. We talked to Coach Shelton about that and a bunch of other stuff as well. Let's let you listen in on, boy, just one of the best coaches in the history of the sport of field hockey, one of the finest coaches here on campus at Carolina, Hall of Famer Karen Shelton.
Jones, as we say, it seems like almost every single week, we've got another national champion on the pod.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's hard to do a podcast at Carolina without having a national champion, but this is special.
Oh, yeah.
This freshly minted.
The most newly minted national champion, although she's done it several times before. On campus is field hockey coach Karen Shelton. The program just won its seventh national title on Sunday with a 2-0 shutout of Maryland. So, Coach Shelton, I guess I don't even really have to ask you how you're doing.
I'm doing terrific. I couldn't be happier. I'm just thrilled. Thrilled for the team, for the university, and for our program.
Take us through just the last couple of days and the whirlwind that has been winning the championship and trying to get back here and getting settled.
Well, winning the championship was awesome, obviously, and it's a fun weekend. It's hectic, and you don't know if you're going to advance. We had to play a tough Wake Forest team to get to the final, and you know, just planning and quick turnaround and preparation. But it's not anything new. It's just that four teams are the only ones busy on that weekend. So thrilled that we prepared well for a team that we hadn't faced all year, a strong Maryland team, and we were able to play well and defensively. We talked about how defense wins championships, and they put a lot of pressure on us, and we didn't break. So really fun.
For people who don't know, Coach Shelton's team was 23-0, undefeated. I think you outscored your opponents like 130-16. Is that about right?
I think it was more like 103-16.
103-16.
Yeah.
That's still domination. where does this team rank? You've had six other national champions. Is this potentially the best team in school history?
Well, you hate to compare them, but certainly this team goes down in history. It was a very, very special group. I've had amazing teams. This one was so incredibly focused and motivated and driven, but also they just loved it. Mm-hmm. They loved the game, and they found joy in the game and joy in practice and would just come every day ready to play and do whatever we asked and trying to get better and learn new things. So it was a special group, a joy all season long.
Defensively, it seemed like this was a really elite level team. What made it so, and what kind of attributes do you need to have to be at that level defensively?
Well, we have a strong defensive unit. However, we stress that we defend from the front and attack from the back. So when we don't have the ball, everybody's a defender. And we stress that. And, you know, so the forwards and how we press to get the ball back is vitally important. And just a mentality. You know, we had a little defensive squad. And at the beginning of the year, I challenged them to set records because I think we had talented players and we have experience back there. And Ashley Hoffman is an amazing leader. And so we came close. We didn't set the record, but we sure came close. And I think this day and age, it's easier to score goals now. Mm-hmm. So games are a little bit more high scoring than they used to be. So it was hard to get the record. I think it was 9 way back, but kind of 14 in the modern era.
You obviously knew because you recruited them. You knew you had talent. At what point did you realize this team is capable of being a national championship type team?
I think we knew last year. We had a very good recruiting class coming in, and that year that we spent going over to Duke on a daily basis, really, but you know, 3 times a week, we'd go over to Duke and practice there, and our home game were there. I think that helped build the character of this team. We only had one senior on that team, Gab Major, who is a student assistant for us now, and I think just that shared adversity. It was really character building. They just went with the flow. They did nothing seemed to bother them. It was okay. We thought the year would go fast, and it did. But we had everybody back, so we got to the Final Four. We played the eventual national champion tough, and so we knew we'd be good with the returning players. But we had an amazing incoming freshman class with Aaron Mattson and Yentl Lehmans, as well as a couple of others that really gave us powerful minutes.
You mentioned having to go over to Duke last year. Of course, that's because of all the construction and with everything happening around the athletic department. You now are in this beautiful new facility that has your name on it. I want to get to the naming part second, but first, just how has this facility kind of lived up to what you hoped it would be when it was being built, and has it been a plus for you?
Yeah, it's been a huge plus, and I think it's the talk of the field hockey, collegiate field hockey world, because everybody is just really blown away by the facility, the beauty of it, the functionality. It is just magnificent. And, of course, I was leery, you know, when I was – we loved Henry Stadium, and I was leery about moving to this tight location. And so, you know, I just stayed on everybody about making sure we were going to get something really good.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I kept saying, don't give me the bait and switch. But, you know, Mike Bunting, Simon Carcano, Bubba, and John Montgomery ultimately made the decisions to do it right and to make, you know, if they were going to put us over here and you know, it's a great location, but to make us move basically from our home that we had such success for a number of years, that they did it right. And I just really give them credit. And it speaks so well of the university, of our athletic department, and of the sport of women's athletics here.
So your name is of course now on this stadium. Just when it all happened, when you found out, just what were your emotions with that? And do you still every now and then kind of take a peek up there and look at it?
Well, it's amazing. I was blown away, and it was very, very emotional. Ken and Cheryl Williams have been great supporters of not only our program, but the softball team and men's basketball and volleyball, I think gymnastics and Lineberger Cancer Center. I mean, they have just been amazing, and they're good friends. And they surprised me. We were going to go out to dinner right before the season started, and Cheryl, you know, so we were going to meet for dinner. And then I see Tim Smith from the Rams Club, and I see then John Montgomery from the Rams Club. And so I knew, I'm like, what's going on?
He's like, who invited these guys? We don't want them here.
Were you worried they were going to ask you for money? Because most people, when they see John Montgomery, are very concerned.
That's right. Well, anyway, Cheryl put a piece of paper with a rendering of the facility in front of me and said, you know, this is going to be named in your honor.
Wow.
And I just started bawling, and I thought, I still think it should be named for Ken and Cheryl, but they were adamant about their names everywhere as it is, and they really wanted this for me and for the program, and I you know, I'm just so humbled and so grateful to their support. I mean, it is, and I just call it the stadium, just so you know. It's really hard for me to say it.
How does... We've talked some this fall on the podcast about what a great fall it's been for, it seems like, almost every single program that is in the athletic department here at Carolina. How does the culture of the athletic department help a program like yours when you're around so many teams that succeed at such a high level?
Well, we like to think of ourselves as a family, and we support each other. And I think, you know, I think Anson, you know, back in the day, his program was so successful. You know, and then, you know, I wanted to work as hard as I could to live up to that success. But Dean Smith, probably for me, was the one that set the tone forever. I wanted to be, you know, in my sport like Dean Smith was in his sport. And, you know, what would Dean Smith do? I think I lived by that for a long time. And just to have him, you know, be such an inspirational role model for the coaching staff here. And then, of course, Roy carries that on. You know, he's amazing and very supportive of all of our teams. And, you know, the athletes support each other. And so it's fun that we had football players out here last night, some of the soccer boys. And I know the lacrosse boys were doing something. And anyway, it's just fun. It's fun.
So this is your first national title since 2009. You'd been to the Final Four. Your team had been the four. I think this is the 10th consecutive year, I believe that's correct, in making it at least to the Final Four. Was there any pressure there for you? I mean, you've been so successful, but just to take that final step one more time or again to get that title?
Well, I'd be lying if I said that there wasn't. There was. And, you know, and you hate to think that when you lose in the final that you're a failure.
Right.
But or even in the Final Four, if you don't win, you're a failure. But I felt that. I felt that very, very powerfully because that was the story. It was even the story up until, you know, Sunday morning. And so I felt it. I didn't think the team felt it because this was a new team, a different team, a very young, enthusiastic team. And I don't think they were looking back. I think the seniors felt like after last year's loss that they didn't want to lose again. Mm-hmm. So they were motivated, you know, in their senior year. But for me, it was a burden. And you know, I said the curse is over. Thank God. You know, that was heavy there for a while.
That's nice when your curse is, oh, I can't, that seventh one has just slipped through my fingers a couple of times.
These 10 Final Fours in a row are a heavy burden. You mentioned Coach Smith, and it's hard to believe that it's been 20 years since he coached here. What's something you do with your program that you can draw a direct line to say, oh, I feel like I learned that from Coach Smith, or I'm trying to emulate Coach Smith?
You know, even in the huddle, getting ready to play the championship game, we talked about playing hard, smart, and together. I mean, that is the Carolina way. I don't care. That's the Carolina way. And you know, attitude is everything. I think, you know, surrounding yourself with good people, really strong staff, I think is really important. I don't have the number of managers that he has, you know, one manager for each player. I wish I did. But you know, just doing things the right way, you know, valuing the fundamentals of the game. I think that's something that he preached. And also practicing situations. You know, he was a master at the late game scenario and, you know, just knowing what to do and you know the situation and know the time, know the situation.
I don't follow field hockey super closely all the time, follow what the Tar Heels are doing. Just in the national landscape, is this sport continuing to grow, in your opinion? Are you starting to see more teams that are competitive, that are being able to compete at a national level?
I think that the college level right now, there's more parity. And I think that's coming from international players. Mm. So more and more schools are recruiting international players, and that's not necessarily healthy. I think we are growing at the grassroots level. So I think it's going to be a discussion at our coaches' convention, what we need to do about this, because there are some teams now, you know, 11 play at a time, and there's some programs that have, you know, 9 internationals, 10 internationals.
Wow.
And there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, we have a number on our team, and they're amazing, awesome, and it's a great cultural exchange between my players and them, and they'll be friends for life, and they'll go visit them abroad, and I think it's a wonderful thing. However, we have to invest in the American kids, and for every international we bring over, they're taking an American's playing time. You know, so I think that's something that we need to discuss, and we need to perhaps limit, even though it's hard to make that limit.
Sure.
When you think about your day on Sunday, after the game forward, what was the most fun part of your day? When you look back on it, what makes you smile?
I tell you what makes me smile is after the game, we won, and they all huddled, and then we shook hands with the Maryland team, and then they ran over to the bench side where all of our fans and families were, and you know, first they did hugs and kisses, and then they sang the alma mater. And then, of course, you know, when they go, you know, Star Hill Born, I'm a Star, and they're dancing around, like that dance segment just makes me smile. You could just feel that energy and that elation, really. And so to see them all dancing like that, that makes me smile.
Coach, congratulations, and thank you. I know your schedule has to be a whirlwind today, just coming right back from winning the championship. So thank you for giving us a few minutes, and congratulations on yet another national championship. I know it never gets old, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for what you guys do for Carolina Athletics.
We appreciate Coach Shelton's time, and again, a big congratulations to her and her program for yet another national title. And Adam, it was funny, and we've heard Coach Williams say this kind of after championships before too. She was giving us the quick tour around the facility, and she said, oh, yeah, just heading back out to recruiting on Wednesday or Thursday this week. Got to go back out and start recruiting again. And it's just, hey, oh, congratulations. Here, you can have 2 or 3 days to bask in your title, and now go do it again.
We'll give you a day off to be on the pod.
Yeah.
And after that, go out and get some players. Although Coach Shelton did say it's pretty fun to go recruiting when you are the national champion.
I bet so. A reminder, the pod's brought to you by StubHub, the official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. Whether your favorite seat is courtside or comes with a bird's-eye view, head to StubHub and grab 100% verified tickets. We're also brought to you by Circle K. You'll find great people serving customers in clean stores, offering all kinds of products like ice-cold Coca-Cola. A little warmer today. It's been cold. It's been a great day to be out at Pinehurst. Gil Hance has redesigned Pinehurst number 4 to rave reviews. Adam has called it the newest must-play in the country. Be among the first to play. Visit Pinehurst.com. All right, we are going double interview today. Our second interview is with Dwight Hollier, great Tar Heel linebacker, late 80s, early 90s. He was part of that time period of the early Mack Brown days of kind of turning Carolina into a team that really was struggling into what eventually became, you know, ranked number 3 in the nation eventually, and then the late 90s, and had legitimate national championship aspirations there for a couple of seasons. So had a chance to talk to Dwight, who is now a senior associate athletic director here at Carolina, very new to the job. I mean, a month at most, right, that he's been in his new gig. So we talk about the new job. We talk about his playing days. Again, we talk about some very serious personal things that we didn't really know we were getting into, but we ended up getting into a little bit. And so let's get to that interview. We'll come back, and then we have a lot more. But let's hear from Tar Heel great Dwight Hollier. And we're excited to have joining us now here on the Carolina Insider, Dwight Hollier, former Tar Heel linebacker, played nearly a decade in the NFL, worked in the front office at the NFL for several years as well, and has just recently returned to his alma mater as an associate AD. Dwight, what is up?
What's going on? I am excited about being here, Jones.
Let's start with a really important question. You won a toboggan at the Roy Williams live show on Tuesday night of last week. Now, please back me up and let people know that this was not a rigged drawing, that Coach Williams legit pulled out your ticket number and got you the hat. Secondly, there's been some debate about this, Adam. Do you call this a beanie or a toboggan? I've always called it a toboggan.
All right, so I'm going to answer the second question first.
Okay.
It's a hat. it's something to cover the dome. I've rarely used the term toboggan, but that would probably be the one that I choose.
Okay. And now
beanie?
I think a beanie has like the thing on the
top.
Yeah,
beanie has a little helicopter thing.
I think people
from
up north call it like a beanie.
Come on.
Well.
Okay, so now can you at least back me up that it was a legit drawing?
I can't. I'm sorry, Jones. Yeah, the fix was in.
Dwight walked in and said, "Hey, associate AD here. Exactly. You bet. I want that hat. Give it to me."
So what's funny is there were some folks sitting at the table I was sitting at, and got up and left, and left their ticket on the table. So I just grabbed a ticket that was right there in front of me, and it just happened to be that ticket. The funny thing too, though, is we were having a conversation because I'm planning to go to the field hockey Final Four tomorrow in Louisville, and it's supposed to be cold. And I was like, it's cold, and I don't have a hat for this bald head, this giant bald head that's going to freeze. And right after that conversation, the drawing happened, and boom, I won me a hat.
It was meant to be.
If you could
serendipitous right there, Adam.
If you could only win one drawing in the United States in the fall of 2018.
There it is.
Powerball or toboggan?
Yeah.
Toboggan all day.
My head's cold. Let's
hey, it's
go.
All exactly. Brought to you by Alumni Hall, proud sponsor of the Tar Heel Sports Network and on the of the Tar Heels.
Nice.
Okay, Dwight, one more important question that we need to talk about, and then we'll get to some real questions. Adam recently pronounced the word ramen noodles ramen noodles.
I misspoke.
Have you ever heard of that in your entire life?
Ramen noodles? I know a dude named Raymond.
Everybody loved him.
Wow.
I wasn't trying to claim the word is pronounced Raymond. I just said the wrong thing.
Okay, wow. if someone's
Mr. Perfect Language over here,
exactly.
I guess has never done that.
If someone's last name is M-O-N-K, how would you say that?
M-O-N-K.
M-O-N-K. How would you pronounce that last name? Monk.
That's exactly what I said.
No, you say, Adam says Monk.
No, I say it exactly right.
Wow.
I'm not going to say it right now,
yeah,
but just
know.
Trust me, I'm right.
Wow. Okay. Anyway.
Hey.
Dwight.
Adam, you got to watch out for that bus.
Yeah.
I do back that bus up over you all day long.
If Jones ever does anything wrong, I'm going to be all over
you
that.
You got to
so
jump
so far,
on
it hasn't happened.
Yeah, he's Mr. Perfect, you said.
Dwight's on my team. That's 2-on-1. Okay, Dwight, tell us
just because I don't go around giving people toboggans to be my friend. Will you be my friend, Dwight? I'll give you this kerchief.
Tell us a little bit about your role here at Carolina, how it all came about that you made your way back to Chapel Hill.
Yeah, what's interesting is I wasn't looking for an opportunity to come here and was really happy with the work we were doing at the NFL and my role there working on the wellness platform. And I first heard that Nicky Moore had left and went to Colgate to be the AD, and soon after got a call from Bubba asking if there's this position that's come open, would you you know, at least consider. And I thought, yeah, sure, I would. Of course, I love Carolina. I've loved Carolina from the very moment I stepped on campus. And so I'd certainly consider it, but I certainly needed to know more. And so over the course of a few months, we went back and forth, talked about what the position looked like, and ultimately, when it came down to it, it's a chance to come back to Carolina to see my professional career come full circle. Mm-hmm. It's really special to be back, and I love it.
I may not get the title exactly right. It's Associate Athletic Director for Student Athlete Health and Well-Being or something similar to that. Is that correct?
Yeah, Senior Associate Athletic Director for Student Athlete Well-Being and Program Outreach.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit.
I'm not going to make a big deal that you misstated this
yeah,
title.
Right. Then I messed it up. So just tell us a little bit about what exactly is your goal? What are your main topics of interest? Kind of what are you doing?
Sure. So the position really focuses a lot on the wellness of student athletes, and you know, focus on sports medicine, strength and conditioning, nutrition, and my personal goal is that we take this elite program and continue to move it into the upper echelons of university systems as far as the benefits, resources, and wellness that we provide for our student athletes. So that's my personal vision, is that we continue to elevate our program and take it to a new level.
As you've gotten back into college athletics on a day-to-day basis, what surprised you the most? What's been the biggest adjustment?
I think the thing that surprised me the most is how big the athletic department is, how many moving pieces there are, how many, you know, on game day, how many, the vast number of people who are all working towards the same goal on game day. It's an amazing thing to see in action, and it comes off flawlessly. So there's a lot of folks who are giving of their time and doing a lot of things on game day that never really get the shout out. So I'd love to shout them out, because they're doing a fantastic job to make Carolina athletics again come off flawlessly on game day.
I think a lot of people kind of understand the physical aspect of what you're talking about, and hey, you want to be your best in strength and conditioning, make guys as men and women as strong as they possibly can be. All that side of it, I think they get. Where does the mental part of it, the mental health aspect, come in for you? I know you're a licensed counselor as well. Where does that the mental health aspect come in for you, and how important do you think that is?
Oh, I think it's extremely important. It's one of the most important things for me that we should be paying attention to, just because of the pressures and stress to be a student athlete. I mean, people don't know what goes into the day-to-day requirements and the agenda for a student athlete, and the challenges of always being on point, you know, not just performing on in practice and performing when it's game time or there's a meet or a competition, but performing in the classroom, performing in making sure that you're in the right place, doing the right things at all times, and being held accountable to that can create a lot of stress and pressure, and not to mention the challenges that you may be getting from family members, from home. There's issues that come up, you know, there are family members who may be ill or other things that can really create stress.
Just life stuff
for an athlete. And so making sure that we're there to help support those student athletes and providing them the, you know, whether it's counseling or just an ear, making sure that we're there to listen, and that the individuals who interact with student athletes on a daily basis are up to snuff as far as being available and being able to provide that kind of presence for those student athletes.
You were in an NFL locker room for a decade. What's changed about the way people look at the mental side of things from your experience as a player to now?
You know, I think right now the generation of student athletes now and athletes are more open to having conversations about their emotional wellness. Where when I was growing up and playing and participating, we had this you better suck it up mentality, right? So, you know, suck it up, get back in there, brush it off, you know, why you got tears in your eyes, that kind of thing. And it was a huge stigma around, I said huge, usually. there was a huge stigma around mental health and around help-seeking behavior. And so what's changed is the society has made it more welcome to have those conversations, more open to have those conversations. This generation is more apt to pay attention to their emotional wellness and then to even reach out and seek help. Now, it's not a perfect place right now. We're not in a perfect place where folks are reaching out. And, you know, I just right before coming in here, heard about a student athlete who committed suicide, unfortunately, at another university. And so we don't have it figured out, but I think we're moving in the right direction, and we need to continue to provide resources, need to continue to address those challenges that student athletes are facing.
If somebody's listening who's one of those people who's like, oh, I don't know about this touchy-feely stuff, how do you think paying more attention to that side will be beneficial to the on-field or on-court product that people will see?
Well, I say that mental health is health. Mental health is part of your overall wellness. And we're all somewhere, when we think about mental health and wellness, mental health is on a continuum from mental illness to total wellness. And we're all somewhere on that continuum. It is a part of who we are every day. And the more we're able to function at the higher end of that continuum, the better we're going to be. But not just the better athlete we're going to be. You're certainly going to perform better if things are going well, you're sleeping well, you're eating right, and you're feeling good. You're going to perform great. And so how do we keep people in that frame of mind, and also remind them that if your emotional wellness isn't there, your emotional wellness is part of your overall wellness. If it's not there, how can you be the best athlete? But forget being an athlete. How can you be the best student, the best son, the best cousin, you know, whatever it is, that whatever that role is that you play? And I argue that you can't be. And so if your ankle is hurt, you go see a trainer, right? And you know, when I talk to professional athletes, I say if your money is funny, you go talk to an accountant, you find out what you need to do. But what do you do when you're emotionally hurt, and who can you turn to? And the more people that we can put in place to be a beacon that student athletes feel like they can go to, because they will be receptive, the better they're going to be, and the more we can move people towards that higher end of that continuum.
How did you get involved in this field? When did you realize it was something that was of interest to you?
You know, it's strange. When I came to Carolina, I was I started as a speech communications major, thinking I wanted to go into broadcasting. Mm.
That's where all the losers go. It's like, don't do that.
Yes, 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 yes. The loser right here with me. No, but I, you know, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but that was a space where I was like, you know, maybe I could do that. The thing is, I grew up a really shy, reserved kid, and having to give talks and talk in front of people was not my thing. And I remember going to class, and I've talked about this before, but I'd come out of those classes and I'd be drenched in sweat and, like, you know, giant pit stains, and I developed this facial tic when I was talking, and nobody could see it, but I could feel it. I was a mess. And I said, you know, I don't know about this speech communications thing. I should probably look at something else. So I ended up double majoring in psychology, loved it. And so I picked up psychology along the way, and again, it spoke to me. And so fast forward, I get an opportunity to play in the NFL. That's great. My fifth year, they start calling me the old dude in the locker room. So I'm like 28, and they're calling me old man. Hey, old man, what's up? And I said, you know, I should probably start looking at something else. I had already beaten the odds as far as playing in the NFL. And so Nova Southeastern University, where I did my master's degree, had a great psychology program. So I started taking courses in their master's program in counseling and loved it, and decided to dive in. And so my last 3 years playing in Miami, last 2.5 years playing in Miami, I was in school, getting a master's degree in counseling. Ended up leaving Miami, playing for the Indianapolis, well, graduated in 2000 and then played that 2000 season in Indianapolis, got hurt and was out of the game, and went to work right away in the mental health field. Now, to answer your question, I think where my interest in psychology, mental health, and really caring for people probably came from my family and the way we were raised, in that no matter what we had, we didn't have a whole lot, we always had our door open to others. And it was that mentality that I attribute to following this path that I'm on.
You mentioned your time at Carolina. You were here and were a huge part of a very dynamic change in Tar Heel football under Mack Brown, who we've had on the pod.
Twice.
Nice.
How did y'all do that? How did you make that change?
We lost a lot. we lost a lot early. And, I think part of that change was going through some lumps and bruises. And but believing in one another. And I think one of the magical things that Coach Brown had with him is that he could go to any house in America, sit on that couch, and convince that kid to come to Carolina, no matter what our record was. And we were 1-10, 1-10. But those 1-10 years, we were increasingly playing for each other versus playing for ourselves or anything else. And Coach Brown made us believe that we were close. And if we continued to stick together, if we continued to work our tails off and circle the wagons, that we would get there. And those of us that really believed that kept that with us every time we stepped on the field. And ultimately, we did get there. You know, we went 6-4-1 and then 7-4 before I left. But no bowl game, which is crazy. Now you can be 3-8 and go to a bowl game now. Yeah. But we were 7-4 and 6-4-1 and didn't go to a bowl game. So it was really understanding that you were playing for, you know, bigger purpose and playing for each other. We got better, you know. We brought in some better players, or Coach Brown and their staff brought in some better players, and we believed that we were turning the corner, and we did.
What do you remember about that? You said 6-4-1. There was that tie against Georgia Tech, and I don't know if people haven't followed Carolina football closely, they probably don't understand the significance of that tie. What do you remember about that game?
Oh, I remember that game well. I mean, I know that we had several goal line stands, and yep. I remember coming out of the pile as you know, with my hand in the air after fourth down and celebrating, getting a big stop. So I think that game really does stand out because Georgia Tech was a fantastic team that year, and no one gave us a chance. And so to hold them to 13, to keep them from getting in the end zone a couple of different times, was huge. It was like a victory for us. And at the time, they were very highly ranked and ultimately were tied for the national championship. Yep. And won a national championship that year. And the only blemish on their record was North Carolina Tar Heels. My buddy Marco Coleman has never let me forget that.
So after you were done playing in the NFL, you started where you worked in the NFL. Tell us a little bit about what you did for the NFL in that front office type of role.
Sure. So, well, what happened was done at the NFL and went to work in the mental health field. And I spent 12 years working as a psychotherapist, a mental health counselor, in different capacities before getting a chance to come back to the NFL. So I was an intensive outpatient therapist for dual diagnosed youth. I was a school-based therapist. I did placements at foster homes and trained foster parents. I had spent 6 years in private practice, all of this before getting an opportunity to come back and work at the NFL. When I got an opportunity to work at the NFL, I was the director of transition and clinical services, where my focus was on helping to prepare athletes as they transition out of the game, into the game, during. So working with rookies, trying to connect with injured players, working on a transition platform where we could assist players who, as they were leaving the game.
Sure.
And really focusing on any of the emotional wellness aspects of the game and moving forward in that role. And I was there for 5.5 years. My third year, I got promoted to Vice President of Wellness and Clinical Services. Again, the focus was on professional development, continuing ed, make sure that resources were in place for our players. And of course, my niche was our mental health initiatives.
So many people who achieve great success in sports have trouble figuring out what the next chapter is going to be when sports is done. And they're sort of hanging on by any thread to stay in sports. It sounds like you didn't have that trouble at all. How were you able to so easily sort of move into that next chapter?
Well, Adam, I did have that same trouble. I you know, part of my story is I fell flat on my face and in my transition. I was the poster child for doing things the right way. So I got the master's degree and played another year. I was hurt. I got out of the game, went to work right away. I was hired 2 months after filing for severance. And was in that space, but I was still connected to the game and having difficulties understanding who I was without football. And I battled depression significantly during that time. And there were a couple of years where I wasn't in a good place and really, really struggling. And ultimately went to counseling, the counselors and counseling, and I needed it. And that helped me to find my way. And it really started to crystallize the work that I was doing. And if this could happen to me, you know, a guy who played 9 years in the NFL, who not only finished his undergrad degree on time, but also had a master's degree, went to work right away, you know, I married up, you know, all of these things, had some things in place, didn't spend a lot of money, didn't make a lot of money. If it could happen to me after playing 9 years, what happens to the guy who only plays 2 years, who thought he was going to play 10 and didn't finish his undergrad degree? And there are a lot of guys out there like that. And so that transition out of sport, whether it's leaving college and you're never going to play the game again, or it's playing pro and you're never going to play the game again, can be a tremendous challenge for people, even when you prepare. And so paying attention to that emotional wellness piece is so important. So I did struggle. I did fall on my face. And it's because of that that I value the work that I do now, and I understand the importance of it.
So how can we get better at Carolina in that regard? How can you use those experiences personally and what you've learned professionally? How can you use all those experiences for Carolina to get better?
Well, you know, I'm still new. So there's a lot that I still need to understand as far as how we operate and what's in place. And, you know, I certainly don't want to overturn the ship. I think there are a lot of great things going on. It's up to me to understand what that is and not recreate the wheel. I think that there are a lot of great things going on to help prepare student athletes for that transition. You know, the leadership development program with Cricket Lane and the others there, Shelley, they do a fantastic job of providing guidance and leadership to our student athletes. And I think we do a lot of great things, and I'm looking to learn where I can fit in to what's already here.
One of the things you mentioned that sort of surprised you is just how big the athletic department is. How do you make sure that you've still got that personal touch and you still know people to speak to them, even while being part of an entity that's gotten quite a bit bigger than it was when you were here?
Well, it's you know, sort of the politician's way, right? You shake hands and kiss babies. And so I'm going around and trying to meet as many folks as I can and keep everybody's name straight, which is which is a challenge. But it's just being a part of the program and being integrated in the program.
I mean, you saw the NFL from a lot of different angles. What is it that makes the NFL kind of the monster that it is? And how do you think the NFL may see change with the way they do business or kind of what everything's going on with football? Just what do you think the future is there of the National Football League?
Well, I think like here, and the thing that surprised me, I think a lot of people would be surprised at the machine that the NFL is and the number of people behind the scenes who help to make it run. There's some great leaders in the football organization, the NFL, who never make a touchdown or a tackle, but they're scoring behind the scenes and making the program run. And I think as we look at the safety and wellness things that are coming up, the NFL is really innovating the game of football and the safety and other aspects that they're doing, the rule changes that are really directed at taking care of the players and reducing injuries and all of those things. So I think that they are on the way to continuing to evolve the game.
Can I just say that was like the most front office answer, whereas hey, they haven't scored a touchdown or a tackle, but they're scoring behind the scenes. I love that, Dwight. I loved it.
Yeah.
This might surprise you, but Jones and I are pretty far from being part of the NFL.
Yeah, well.
Speak for yourself.
Jones.
Who's someone who we think from afar, we don't like that guy. That guy seems like a jerk. But you know because you actually know them that is actually a good dude.
Well, the one that I'd hear about when I was playing was my teammate Dan Marino. People would say, you play with Dan Marino, he's a jerk. I'm like, no, he's not. No, he's a great guy, a great teammate. And I think what would happen is they'd see Dan out having dinner with his family, and Dan is like, trying to have dinner with my family. And they're like, oh, he's a jerk. No, he's not a jerk. He's trying to have dinner with his family. The guy couldn't go in the grocery store to buy milk for his family because he'd get mobbed if he did. So I think there are a lot of guys who are misunderstood and get a bad rep because of that.
Did he actually give all you guys isotoner gloves?
He did not give me isotoner gloves. He did that for his linemen.
Well, who does he think stopping the other team so he can get the ball back?
Hey,
well,
guess what the next Alumni Hall giveaway at the next Ruins Live is going to be?
Hey. I will be there with ticket in hand.
Go get that ticket, Dwight. Who knows what's going to happen next week?
That's right.
Dwight's going to be walking around from table to table. Give me that ticket.
Yeah,
give me that ticket. Mr. Hollier.
It's not your ticket. Give me your ticket.
Okay, before we let you go, just kind of your goal, and I'll pick a time period, the next year. What do you want things to look like kind of in your role, your understanding of where you fit it? Where is your role a year from now from where you are right now? Because I understand right now you're still kind of in that feeling out process.
Yeah, and so to be able to answer that question, I couldn't be specific with you. I think it's more of continuing the program forward, as I mentioned earlier, and making sure that we have the right resources in place, that if there is a space where we can add to the resources, clinical resources and others, that we take those steps, that we make whatever changes that need to happen. I mean, it's sort of a political answer, but I think it's continuing to move forward with on the path that we're on, because I think that the athletic department has been on a great track before I got here. I'm just riding along trying to help make it better.
Can I ask one more question? If this is too personal, that's fine. Just tell me you don't want to talk about it. When you're talking about going through some dark days when you were done playing, I have never experienced that personally. I don't know if Adam has, but it is such a, from those who have, it's such a difficult thing. What can you put into words what it's like and the challenge that it presents to an individual when they're going through something like that? For those of us who have been fortunate enough not to have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's a dark place. It's a dark and lonely place, and in some ways, it's going to be different for everybody. So this is my experience, and I can't speak for others who may be struggling emotionally, but for me, it was dark. It was isolating and self-isolating. I was alone and didn't want to be around anybody, but I felt alone, and I felt inadequate. And there was this time period where I would say, or people would come and say, well, you know, you play in the NFL, that's great. And I would say the craziest thing, like I'd say, well, I only played 10 years. Or I only played 9 years, I'm sorry. I only played 9 years. And, you know, and people would look at me like, what's, you only played 9 years? And when I hear myself say it now, I'm like, dude, you need to shut up. You know, you only played 9 years. The average experience in the NFL, I call it an experience, it's not a career. The average experience is 2.7 years. I played 9, but I was so caught up on not playing 10 that I was miserable. I was miserable. I only played 9 years. I'm like, you know, go back, you know, if I could go back 12 years or 14 years, I'd probably slap that version of me. Like, dude, get over it.
How can we, the general we, I don't mean we just Adam and me, but how can the general we help with this? If we're not, we're not mental health experts. How can we help with this with people who are struggling?
Well, I think one is just educating yourself about what mental health is. And there's a great training program called Mental Health First Aid that provides a education around the different issues involved with mental health. And it helps you not to be a counselor or a clinician, but to be an advocate for those who may need help. I think that that's one way. The more people educating themselves about what mental health is, it can be helpful in supporting those who come to you and talk about personal situations. And just being an ear sometimes can be enough in listening. But the more you can educate yourself about different challenges and issues, the better support you can be, the better advocate you can be.
Adam, I think what a coup for Carolina to be able to get Dwight Hollier back and just be involved at a executive level with its athletic department. I think Dwight is going to be a huge asset to Carolina Athletics.
I think he would be a great get if you take out the decade in the NFL and fantastic career at Carolina playing football.
Yeah.
Like if you just cut off his resume before that point, you would still think, oh, he's a great guy to have on your athletic department staff. If you add in all that, there just aren't that many people out there that combine that level of experience at such a high level with also real world experience at a very high level. That's an extremely nice mix to have that I would have to think both the athletic department staff and the student athletes are going to benefit from him being around.
I also think that as the focus on athlete health and welfare continues to become even more dialed in, I think to have somebody kind of leading that chart, and he even said during that time, he said, he's not here to change everything. He's not, and he's still not quite sure where it is moving forward. But that you have somebody who has the experience that he has leading that charge, I think that's A, smart, and B, going to be important moving forward. Because, I mean, we've seen it with some very serious incidents in college football here in the last couple of months. The health, the well-being, the safety of your athletes, it's always been important, but I think it's just continuing to be even more focused on.
I think if I'm a parent of a high school age student athlete, that would be a recruiting plus for me,
yeah.
knowing that you take that seriously enough that you have someone on staff who understands that and is trying to work on that. That would be important.
Okay. Adam, do you have a Thanksgiving week list?
I've got a cornucopia of items on the list.
Well played.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Okay, this week's list. Boy, I tell you what, it was a big weekend for the pod.
Yeah.
In many different facets.
Oh, yeah.
Number one, former pod guest and occasional pod listener, Wes Durham, dropped a bigster on the TV broadcast on Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Our Twitter lit up.
Yeah, that's big time. And Sterling Manley, if that goes national, you're welcome, buddy. Wes Durham and the pod are saying you're welcome. Now, that same very night, KJ Smith, as we've already mentioned, gives the shout-out to Big Grits for the motivation to throw down the dunk.
Big time.
Then the very next day,
yep.
Western Carolina realizes they're in Chapel Hill, the home of the pod.
Yep.
And so per a tweet from John Bauman, possibly not how you pronounce his last name.
Adam's not very good with names.
Right.
Or words in general.
Yeah, right. I think you pronounce it Raymond. Western Carolina pays tribute to the pod by sitting out what appeared to be about 3 or 4 dozen cookout cups
yep.
outside their locker room. Several people noted that those cups may have been filled with the pod. We cannot confirm the pod shake, not like the actual pod. So we can't confirm or deny that, but I believe that would have been an excellent treat to enjoy on the bus back to Cullowhee, in all likelihood. Michael Keller sent us a tweet. This was like an actual informational tweet, which we don't get a lot of, where people have actual questions. Normally it's something more serious like, about cookout.
Right.
And he wanted to know the last time Carolina basketball had only played 4 December games. Mm-hmm. He didn't think that seemed very normal. It's not. The last time was the 1961-62 season. Dean Smith's first year at Carolina.
Wow.
So it's been quite a while. 4 December games is not very many.
They're making up with it. They're making up for it with a game seemingly every day in November.
Well, you got to set up. You got to set the stage somehow.
Yeah, that's right.
You know who's not going to like that schedule are the Tar Heel players when they have to practice a ton in December.
Adam, I am scrolling through my feeds here. I can't remember who sent us the tweet that said he had already. Oh, it was his last name's Canada. Is that right? Who said that he had always pronounced ramen noodles Raymond noodles.
Yeah, he did, and he felt attacked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if that was a joke tweet or not.
No, it was dead serious.
I've never heard it pronounced anything other than ramen. I mean, it is ramen.
I don't think I've ever pronounced it until last week, at which time I did a terrible job. And Dwight Hollier agreed
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, confirmed it.
So he's probably right.
No big deal.
I didn't necessarily believe you, but I do believe him.
No big deal.
Sam Perkins.
Oh, yeah. What up?
College Basketball Hall of Fame inductee this past weekend, and Roy Williams and Hubert Davis were there. Flew out to Kansas City just to be a part of it as Sam Perkins was inducted.
If you had to do the all-time list of Tar Heels who are not underappreciated, because I don't think that's the right term, but who maybe are a little just fly under the radar a bit in their greatness, I think Sam Perkins is not a starter on that team, but he might be ranked number one on the list.
For a long time, I thought it was James Worthy, but I feel like his appreciation level has grown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure why, but I do feel like it has. And I think Sam Perkins has kind of taken over from him. And you know who I think would be passing him the ball? Ed Cota. Yeah. It's amazing how many people don't fully get how good Ed Cota was. 3 Final Fours, people.
Yeah. Almost bounced it off the backboard to Vince Carter for a dunk, for gracious sake.
I wasn't even going to mention that, but he sure did. One of the greatest dunks ever, and it didn't even go in. We could probably fill out the rest of our team if we had enough time.
No, we can do a draft later on in which I will smoke you.
I'll pick for integrity and discipline and hustle.
I will pick.
And you'll pick for flash and social media.
I'll pick for clicks.
I wanted to give a what up. to wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Wrestling won at number 8 Arizona State, and they're now ranked in the top 25, and I'm assuming when the new poll comes out, probably higher than that.
Carolina's got a really good wrestling coach in Coleman Scott. Just a young guy who's got his program kind of building back up. He's got a lot of young guys. I think that is a sport that – keep an eye on that sport for the next, like, 2 or 3 years. I think Carolina's going to get really good in wrestling. I mean, it's already – good, but I think it's going to take some next steps to big time here soon.
I thought it was ironic, like rain on your wedding day.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That the field hockey team won the national championship on the day that women's soccer won in the third round of the NCAA tournament, and everybody was kind of like patting women's soccer on the head as they were celebrating field hockey. And I think Karen Shelton kind of touched on it there in the interview. Anson Dorrance made a lot of this possible for some of these other sports like field hockey.
It really, and I'm not, now, this statement is a big statement, and I in no way am discrediting Frank McGuire or anything that happened pre what I'm about to say. So much of Carolina athletics, still today, can be traced back to Dean Smith and Anson Dorrance, I think.
Yes.
Don't you?
Yes. Well, I think one of the whole things that makes Carolina athletics what it is the success on the women's side and how good they've been in women's sports, and that is Anson Dorrance. Mm-hmm. He made that. Just pretty amazing. And side note, another thing I didn't necessarily realize, part of the reason Carolina was able to invest so heavily in women's sports was because of Ernie Williamson, the former director of the Rams Club, or executive director, whatever his official title was. He really championed the scholarship endowment. This is in the next issue of Born and Bred. Sneak peek at a story you're going to read in there. And he would not let anyone touch the scholarship endowment, even when they were building the Smith Center and they weren't sure they were going to make it. And people were kind of saying, we'll just take some of the scholarship endowment money. And he said, you will not, sir. And so he was able to preserve that. And that's why Carolina was able to fully fund some of those women's sports that turned out to be so dominant, was because they had that scholarship endowment. So when you hear people talking about the scholarship endowment, you think, dollar bills, whatever. No, that is a reason why you're able to sit there and brag to your friends, hey, the Tar Heels have 44 national championships. That's part of the reason why.
Oh, a little knowledge.
Yeah, every once in a while I try to say something factual.
By the way, you were dropping some fire national championship facts after the Tar Heel field hockey team brought home the title.
I love that.
Yeah.
Carolina has more first of all, every student who's entered since 1978 has been on campus for at least one NCAA championship.
That's crazy.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. And so those students are now 59 years old. And then Carolina has 44 national titles, as we just said. A host of other ACC teams combined. Definitely Virginia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, Duke, State, Wake Forest, and several others combined have 43. Combined.
Next closest, I think, is Virginia with 24.
Yeah, that's right. So, and you know who actually is up there quite a bit is Maryland, but they're not in the ACC anymore. Sorry, suckas. Hope you enjoyed taking that L in field hockey. Could have been a conference game, but you didn't want it to be.
Enjoy your road trip to Nebraska.
Yeah. Hope you like that 52-51 loss when the dude was wide open on the 2-point play. Let's see.
Boy. Hope you enjoy that, Maryland. You finally got your comeuppance. It took until 2018, baby.
I bet if they had known that hot fire was coming, they would not have left the conference. Guys, the Big Ten Network is going to give us $22 billion.
No, hold on, guys. Gary Williams is on the phone. He is saying don't do that because Jones and Adam may burn him one day on the pod.
I have a how can you justify that?
Woo!
And it's not about Maryland.
Nice.
Justify! How can you justify what you've done?
How can you possibly justify that?
This how can you justify that goes out to ESPN. Not for the reason you think.
They should have their own special wing in the how can you justify that Hall of Fame.
According to awfulannouncing.com or whatever.
No, I know what you're talking about.
ESPN this year will do more than 200 college basketball games via remote. That's up from 45 3 seasons ago.
We've talked about this before. I know the broadcasters hate it. I've talked to them before. I know they do.
You can't do the game if you're not in the arena.
The problem is they've overstretched themselves so much. And a lot of it had to do with that huge amount of money they paid for the NBA. And that huge amount of money they paid for the rights to the NBA can go to the other reason why they have their own special home, and how can you justify that? Because all they worry about now when they're talking about college basketball is hyping up the guys who then are going to go to the product in the NBA that they have paid so much money for. Adam, I went to ESPN.com today. The first three stories were about Zion Williamson on ESPN.com college basketball page. Zion Williamson is a great basketball player. Duke is going to be a team that is in the mix for the national title this year. But do the top three stories need to be about the same thing? It's incredible. And it just, it's, and I know I'm going to sound so old and crotchety here, but I know the time's different. You can't have SportsCenter that just shows highlights anymore. I know the world is different. But it just, it bums me out that now sports television and sports journalism is so much, let's come up with these crazy topics and have five people sit around a table and come up with insane takes on things that they don't actually believe, but you just say to get people fired up. And it just, that's where we are, and it stinks.
You're going to get me all fired up, and I didn't want to do that. It's totally ludicrous that people can sit there and come up with their whatever take on whatever issue, and everyone just kind of accepts the idea that that may or may not be how they actually feel, because 3 days later, they may take the complete opposite side. That's not how it's supposed to work. You don't say things just to get people to follow you on Twitter or watch you on whatever show or dislike you because of what you said. You're supposed to say it because that's actually your viewpoint and your analysis of the issue. Not, let me see what I can say to fill this 3 minutes, and then, you know, come Thursday, I may feel differently and say something completely different. It's just like how a lot of people put a lot of effort into things like Twitter and act like it's some sort of long-lasting thing that people will treasure for the rest of their lives. I got some news for you. No one is printing out a tweet and putting it up on their bulletin board. Nobody is saving that in their scrapbook. They're seeing it for 1 second and immediately forgetting about it. And we're the poorer for it.
I feel like that, especially there at the end, you were wearing like a like a top hat and an overcoat, and we're walking through the streets of London with Tiny Tim, telling the young local boys to go get the largest turkey they could find in the street window.
I had to take off my monocle to read my list and my notes for that one. I wasn't even going to talk about that, but I felt that I needed
you,
to.
You, fine boy, go find me the largest turkey, and if you can spare some ramen noodles as well.
We're going to take a little Christmas to the Cratchits. That's all.
Okay. I guess we're done. I don't even think we have anything else.
We've got like 14 see you later big gritses.
Yeah, so we've got double see you later big grits. A reminder, Adam and I will be back with you next week, so we hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll be in Vegas with the basketball team, then hustling back to Keenan Stadium for Carolina and NC State on Saturday. So we'll have a ton to talk about next week. We'll start lassoing up some guests between the holiday season, between Thanksgiving and Christmas as well. So looking forward to that too. Adam, anything else before we say au revoir?
That Tuesday pod next week is going to be chock full of pod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It won't be in as nice a facility, though, as the...
No, we'll probably be back in the closet.
We're going to, like, be put our face up to the glass here at Karen Shelton Stadium next week. Like, hey, guys, can we come back in and pod some more?
I'm a little concerned about when Karen Shelton comes to work in the morning and we're, like, hiding under the couch. She's like, Jones and Adam, you have to leave. No, Coach Shelton, let us stay.
Please.
One more pod, Coach Shelton.
So, again, big congratulations to Coach Shelton and her team for their seventh national defeated season. Just a dominant, dominant season. I think they won by one goal twice all year, and so they won by multiple goals in every other game. So huge congratulations to her and her team. Coach Shelton and Dwight Hollier will join our good friend the RZA to send us out here on the latest edition. Have a great Thanksgiving of the Carolina Insider.
This is Karen Shelton here, and I want to say, see you later, Big Grids.
I'm Dwight Hollier with Carolina Athletics. See you later, Big Grids.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.